Yes, hello and welcome to another edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Great to have your company. Adam Peacock alongside Simon Hill as always, back from Adelaide and fresh in the podcast room for a chat about football.
Fresh as a daisy after the 5 a.m. alarm call this morning. Marvellous.
Tell you who's not as fresh as a daisy, Daniel Garb, who's away at a friend's wedding or a family
another
wedding.
One.
Yeah, I know. Popular guy.
He's a
man about town, is our guy. So we've got David Weiner here from the Fox Football website. How are you, Davey?
Always a pleasure to drop in at Phil Garby's sizable shoes.
Good to see you, Disco.
Yep. Always
good to be back.
Let's get into it because there's a bit to talk about when it comes to the A-League this weekend.
Sets it up for Andrew Hall to have a shot at goal. Andrew Hall, take that one out, he says. Right up in the top corner. It's a cracking finish.
Right, a caveat. First up, Simon, hold fire. Just hold fire.
Sorry, Adam, I'm on the boundary.
Hold fire for just a short amount of time because Ben Wilson, referee's boss of the FFA, is going to join us on this particular podcast. We're looking forward to hearing from him. So let's talk about the football, if we may, first up. And I know it's all intertwined in certain decisions that happened over the weekend, but let's purely go on, okay, the table. Newcastle go top, played very, very well against Melbourne Victory, then Sydney jump above them, and then you look down the bottom and Brisbane and Melbourne Victory have all of a sudden got those problems coming rushing back. But you couldn't help but be impressed by the two teams that played in the FFA Cup final and how they backed that up on the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Sydney, we kind of expect that from them. But I think Adelaide showed why they were quite fancied before the season as well, from what people had seen from them. Brilliant work done on the pitch, and it's been rewarded come the season. And I think it almost got them the goods in the FA Cup final as well. I think you see Yas is controlling that team beautifully, and I think they're starting to build very nicely into hopefully throwing a bit of a spanner in the works so that Sydney don't have it their own all way through the season.
You look at their squad and the players that they bring in, Simon, when they've had these injury worries, and they've all performed at a level close enough to the player that they've replaced, which lends you to believe that they're being coached very well.
And the latest of which was Ryan Strain, 20 years of age, a surprise selection at right fullback. We all sort of anticipated that Ocheng would get the nod with Moroni out suspended for, of course, those reasons involving the ball boy on Tuesday night. And I thought he was terrific. He certainly wasn't alone. Ryan Kitto is, you know, starting to grow in stature. Not just his goals, but of course that's important. They need a goal scorer, Adelaide. And at the moment, George Blackwood is not delivering. Baba Diawara is not delivering, even from 11 metres. So somebody's got to step up to the plate. And Ryan Kitto's done that in recent weeks. Late winner against the Mariners last week and two goals on Sunday to see off the Wanderers. Yes, there was controversy, which we're going to talk about, but I think overall, you know, Adelaide were good value and that they're starting to build into something that we anticipated they might be at the start of the season.
And Sydney, again, that first 20 minutes, you thought, oh, that's the opportunity for Brisbane Roar, and Brisbane were way off, and Bozza gave them a massive bake on match day Saturday about their application as professionals, Brisbane Roar. But, Sydney, wow, great.
There's actually not much more we can say about them that's not fresh on what we've been saying for many, 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 many weeks. And I think looking ahead in terms of as look at contenders for Socceroos and things like that, and you got potentially a coach that may be linked, you're looking at guys like Josh Perlante and Brandon O'Neill, and they've just got to keep playing at that level to put themselves in the frame for next year. But other than that, it's just business as usual from them. It's very hard to come up with anything fresh to say about them.
Well, again, the only thing I would add to that is that, you know, without Ninkovic, without Zullo, without Babo, did come on late off the bench. But, you know, they're three big changes. I can't remember the last time Graham Arnold made three changes to that team. That's how regular that starting 11 has been. So, you know, when you saw those changes at the start of the game, you thought, could this be a night that Brisbane might spring a bit of a surprise here, particularly with the fatigue after the cup final? But aside of the first maybe 5 minutes when Brisbane were reasonably good, as soon as Sydney FC, you know, got that early goal, there was only ever going to be one winner. They were terrific. I endorse those comments about Josh Berlante. I thought he was sensational on Saturday night. and there were others as well. Mirzayevsky, of course, is starting to return to that form that we saw in the cup quarterfinal. He's a terrific player. And even the ones that, you know, I know Matt Simon, we'll talk about that controversy as well. But, you know, in terms of him actually doing a job for them, he did really well up until the send-off.
Hey, Newcastle as well. I reckon I've got Newcastle and Adelaide on the same level, even though Newcastle got the jump on the Reds in terms of points accrued so far. But, I mean, we talk of Adelaide about bringing players in and not missing a beat. Yeah. Well, Newcastle have gone as close to that as well.
They've nailed it. Because if you looked at it in theory when they were assembling the squad and when Ernie had come in, you looked at it when the last few years they've just been a bit rudderless and they've assembled genuine A-League experience. And it could go either way. It could go that they were very comfortable and they might not have the motivation, but they'll come out and done what they've done so far this season. And in a league where there's a little bit of sameness and there's some narratives that have continued, I just find them, along with the Mariners, a raw breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And if I have to circle a fixture to watch that I'm going to prioritise, it's going to be the Jets, because I just love the way they play and the way they direct, they're forward thinking. And Ernie Merrick's got a plan. I don't know if he's got the credit that he deserves so far, because they're executing it brilliantly. And with Petrados, the way he's slipped into Vargas's position, full, absolutely all power to them. I think it's fantastic.
They're the story of the season so far.
Unquestionably.
Yeah. The only downside, and look, this is a league-wide problem at the moment, is for a team that's doing so well, they only had 8,000 there on Thursday night. Now, whether that's because of the Thursday night kickoff or...
It is.
You know, there's other things.
Ban Thursday... Well, I'm big on this, Simon. So, ban Thursday night games outside of school holidays.
So how do we explain only 10,000 in Sydney on Saturday night?
Well,
how do we explain
problem.
Only 8,000 in Adelaide on Sunday?
That's another
anyway,
problem.
League-wide problem. Let's talk about the football. Newcastle, very, very good. Not only without Ronnie Vargas, which you quite rightly say, Dimi Petratos has really stepped up to the plate. I think he's another name that could be in Socceroo conversations. But also Andrew Nabut, you know, no Roy O'Donovan for the last couple of weeks, a score of 7 goals in the opening rounds. And he's been missing. They barely missed a beat. They scored 4 goals against, and this is the caveat, Melbourne Victory stank the place out on Thursday night. Apart from the opening 20 minutes, took the lead, great goal from Costa Barbarousas. As soon as they lost Mark Milligan to a needless red card, really, whether you agree with the decision or not, he shouldn't be doing that. He shouldn't be sticking his head into an opponent. You give the referee the opportunity to make that decision. The Victory threw the towel in far too easily, in
massive
my opinion.
Problem.
They were
massive
terrible.
Problems.
Just massive. A quick question. Simon, you wrote last week that Kevin Muscat's your man to take over from... No, all I want to ask
Thanks,
is this.
Thanks, Dave.
No, I just want to ask, do you want to see... I just applied for a column.
He's just bowled me middle stump, hasn't he?
And you've shouldered arms too.
That's a tough probing question. So the Garvey wouldn't ask such probing questions
That's
of you
true.
When he's like, no, do you want to see, or do we need to see Muskie negotiate this troubled water and how he actually approaches it? Because there's a lot of sameness about the Victory at the moment. And Boz was going on about predictability last season with the Victory.
Yep.
And the recruitment was very much going back to type. My only query on, and Muskie's in the 3-4 Aussie candidates, obviously, for the Socceroos, if there is a local candidate. But the flexibility and tactical uniqueness to actually go about that and dig himself out of this hole.
I totally agree with that. And obviously, that is the big question mark against Muskie at the moment. The reason I've come out in favour of Kevin Muskie is, I think, in a very limited field of domestic candidates, if that's the way they're going to go, I think he's the coach that probably best suits overall the style that they're trying to continue that they've been playing under Ange Postecoglou. in terms of actual runs on the board, there's no doubt that Graham Arnold is, you know, streets ahead of most, although Ernie Merrick might have something to say about that, but I don't think he's a genuine contender. Maybe he should be. But Arnie plays a different type of football to the way the Socceroos have been playing over the last couple of years.
Didn't mean it to go into Socceroos chat, but I do want to get about what's going on with...
I'm pleased you brought it up, because, you know, I've had a bit of stick for saying Kevin Muskett, and that's fair enough. But it's
only because you said it 2 days before they got pumped.
Well, yeah, but I mean, obviously, you know, you don't have the benefit of hindsight, which people seem to think you do, bizarrely. But there is a logic behind it. If you want to continue down that path, and the players and the FFA have said, we want to continue down that path. Well, if you're going to stay local, then Muskett's the logical choice.
Mariners, they're playing good football.
Yep.
That was... Fantastic. That's performance of the weekend, I think. Yeah. With all due respect to Newcastle, but Newcastle did it at home against 10 men, and it was a great performance. Yeah. But the Mariners, their little buddies from down the road, that was better away from home. Only their third win away from home under Paul Okon. Surely their best.
I'm so happy for them because, again, they're that breath of fresh air, and they play a style of football that you can tell has the right intent with resources and players that... You know, he doesn't have the roster that Melbourne Victory have at the moment to go about that. And before the Honduras games, I chatted to Paul for a story reflecting on the Uruguay games of 2001. And I said, Paul, you must be pretty happy with how you're going. And he goes, oh, but geez, I'd love a win. You know, geez, I'd love to actually see the return for the effort these guys are putting in. And they're starting to see that now, which is absolutely fantastic because some of the recruitment in there was quite clever. Some of the players there are quite bright and... The one that's going to underlie all of this discussion, of course, is Daniel De Silva, which is when we want to feel good and see things that make us happy about Australian football, that's got to be one of them.
Yep.
Can I talk about the opposition?
Yes.
Houston, we have a problem.
Well, what about...
With Wellington Phoenix.
Yeah. What about Columbus Crew, we have a problem? Does that make sense to you?
Columbus Crew, let me think about that
the
one.
The MLS have...
I know where they play.
Yeah, well, they're not going to play in Columbus anymore. Dorothy, wait a minute. No, that was Kansas. No, they're going to move. The owner has come in and slid behind everyone's back and basically gone, yep, I'm going to take them somewhere else. We're going to play them somewhere else. And they're moving. They want to move them from Columbus. And the metrics weren't quite there in the eyes of the MLS, Garber, and the Commissioner Garber.
Is this the story that the Southern Expansion Group are looking to...
So this is what swings it back to a Wellington. Can you imagine a Columbus Crew type situation manifesting itself? And the to-do list at the FFA is as long as my shopping bill, and the shopping bill at home is pretty big because we've got six humans living inside the house, so it's a long shopping list. The to-do list is large at the FFA. I don't know where it fits this whole what do we do with Wellington.
Well, they've got to do something because 2 years ago they basically gave them an ultimatum and said you have a 10-year license but it's conditional. 4-3-3 in line with the curriculum. The first 4 years, you've got to tick these boxes, you've got to tick that box. Which boxes are they ticking
at the moment? That's a broken record.
They're bottom of the league. Record. There's no marquee. Their crowds are poor. Their membership figures are among the lowest in the leagues. I want to know what boxes they're ticking at the moment.
Yeah.
And I've always been... I've said this many times in the past. I've always been a fan of having Wellington Phoenix in the competition. I think they're a good club. They've got solid owners. But they've got to contribute more than they're doing at the moment.
Yep.
They're dragging the chain, and it's simply not good enough. If we're going to have a team dragging the chain, then it has to be an Australian team. It can't be a team from New Zealand. They should be one of the strongest clubs in the competition, on and off the pitch, and at the moment, they're not.
Wish I could disagree with you, but I can't.
100%. 100% right.
Let's now continue the discussion about the A-League and the matter that caused so much discussion on the weekend and the situation with the VAR. And to chat about these issues, if you want to call them issues, the referees boss at the FFA, Ben Wilson, has been good enough to join us. And Ben, I don't know what bunker you're in or if you're 30 feet underground waiting for more mortar shells to hit you from above. But, mate, thank you for your time. How was your weekend?
Yeah, good. Don't mention bunker. Some business.
Oh, yeah. Hey, mate, seriously, over the weekend, your take on what happened with the VAR?
Yeah, look, I think obviously there was a lot of talk about VAR and a lot of use of the VAR over the weekend. And on the whole, the time it's taking is too long, but the decisions that we're making are generally correct. So when you think about the reasons that we're trying to bring VAR into the game, and that's to... hopefully improve the game and to correct decisions that are clearly wrong. In those respects, I think that's being achieved.
Just on the time that it's taking, notice that the Bundesliga, they actually don't get the referees to run over to refer, to have a second look. They trust the guy upstairs in the bunker or whatever you want to call it, in that little room inside the stadium. They trust the guy that if he says, for instance, Avram Papadopoulos just chucked a golden goal the way of Matt Simon, he's got to go. He doesn't need to run over to the screen. Is that something that can be tightened up in your eyes?
Yeah, I think so. So the protocol that is being used by everybody, including the Bundesliga, recommends that for subjective decisions, so things where it's not a black and white, is the ball in, is the ball out, was the foul inside or outside the penalty area, but the subjective decisions around, is that violent conduct or is that a deliberate handball, that the referee should be looking at those decisions via an on-field review. And that's to, I guess, conform to this ideology of FIFA and IFAB, that the final decision is always taken by the referee. So where there is some subjectivity, the referee looking at it themselves is a good thing because they can then make the final decision. However, I accept that the way that we're currently doing it with those on-field reviews is taking too long, and that's where a lot of the criticism is coming from.
So on that, so as it develops and you learn from the weekend, obviously, an incident like the Papadopoulos one, will you now instruct the guys to just say, listen, he spat, get him off. You don't need to have a look at it.
Yeah, I think probably the delay in that particular incident was that there were two red cards. The spitting part of that red card was very clear and very simple, and I expect that the referee could have actually made that decision on the advice of the VAR, but there was also then the subjectivity around the second decision of Matt Simon and whether that should also be a red card, and that's why the referee did an on-field review.
Ben, Simon here, I don't like the VAR. I'll come out and say that, but I think my issue with it over the weekend, not least because as a commentator, it spoils my enjoyment of the game because we're constantly stop-starting. But aside of that, you say that we're getting the decisions right. I think some fans, and certainly I had an issue with the game in Adelaide, that the Baba Diawara interference with the goal, was he offside, was he not? He looked to us to be clearly offside. Whether he touched the ball or not, to me, he was interfering with play. It looked to me like that was an error, and yet the goal was allowed to stand. I mean, are we viewing that wrong? Or?
Yeah, so I suppose the existing principles around offside and benefit of the doubt to the attacking team still remain, and that's why the assistant referees have been told to leave the flag down if there's any doubt around offside situations, knowing that if it is clearly wrong, that the VAR will pick it up. You probably also know that the cameras that we use, especially at that game yesterday, they're not in line with the second last defender or the offside line. They're on the edge of the penalty area. So there is some doubt, or the VAR had some doubt as to whether Diawara was actually clearly in an offside position or not, whether there was a trailing leg of a defender that potentially kept him onside. And he had some doubt as to whether that decision to say that he was onside was clearly wrong. And so because he had some doubt and there was no side-on conclusive evidence to show that it was definitely offside, he supported the on-field decision, which was to say, benefit of the doubt to the attacking team, not clearly offside, therefore a goal.
Okay, let me ask you another one in a similar sort of a vein. The two handballs that were contentious over the weekend. First of all, Robbie Cornthwaite, penalty awarded to Adelaide. He gets a second yellow card.
Jacob Pepper.
Jacob well. Pepper, yeah. With the one on Saturday. He stays on the pitch. Actually, that's because Cornthwaite had already been booked, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I've just destroyed my own argument.
No. But did Pepper get a yellow card?
I'm trying to remember whether he did or not.
I'm not sure. Ben, can you confirm? Hang on. I can confirm
it
on my little lappy.
My head either.
Keep talking, Simon. Anyway, give me 20 seconds.
So does Chris Beath have to give Cornthwaite the second yellow card in that instance?
No yellow for Pepper, by the way.
No yellow for Pepper. So there we go. That sort of confirms the argument. So Jacob Pepper escapes with a yellow card for the same offence that Cornthwaite gets a yellow card for. Same outcome, penalty kick, but because Cornthwaite's already been booked, Wanderers go down to 10. Pepper doesn't even get a yellow.
Yeah, so with Pepper's, it's a deliberate handball, and it's the ball just going into the penalty area. The difference between that one and Cornthwaite's is Cornthwaite's deliberate handball, which people don't seem to be arguing about. They're saying it is a handball. That's a ball that is going towards the goal. That's a shot on goal. So that deliberate handball is stopping a promising attack. That's the difference between those two incidents. The fact he gets a yellow card is what happens once you deem that that's a handball, because it's a shot on goal. And the fact it's the second yellow card means that the player is sent off.
Mm. Opinions, they're everywhere.
Well, the handball's a good subject to talk about opinions, because ultimately the VAR is meant to be for obvious error. And handball is such a subjective area of decision. So, Ben, are you happy with where it's, the line is being drawn at that obvious error stage? But how hard is it for this to continue on, to be clear and without controversy, when even something as black and white as obvious error with something like handball is going to have subjectivity around it?
Yeah, there's going to always be some debate around decisions and whether they're clearly wrong or not. But in terms of the handball, the referee yesterday, Chris Beath, didn't see that handball. But it's, for me, clearly a handball. And as I said, I don't think too many people disagree with that being a handball. They potentially don't like that a player is sent off, but that's not to do with the VAR. That's just the way the laws are written. So we set a high bar. IFAB encouraged the participating countries to set a high bar because we want to have minimum interference for maximum benefit, is their phrase. So minimum interference means not reviewing everything. And when you do review it, you know, you review it for key match-changing decisions. It's probably important to note, even though it feels like the VAR is all that anyone is talking about, we've only actually made reviews in 9 matches this season out of, I think we've played 39 matches. So it's not as prevalent as people think, but it's a big talking point because when it is used, it's used in critical situations, and that's how it's designed to be used.
Ben, in rugby league, sometimes you can hear the bunkers' audio of the thought process of their decision-making.
Are we not allowed to do that, Ben?
I was about to ask, would that clarity not help? Because we'd see the time frame and understand why. And second of all, some of the context you have to put out, all the fires you have to put out the next day might be clear on the spot.
Is there a reason inside the stadium, I'm waiting for it to get really combustible. It was the case on Friday night. Sorry to interrupt, Ben. You can answer Dave now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think IFAB and FIFA are pretty conservative. We are already pushing the boundaries just by showing replays of incidents in stadia in Australia, which they find hard to grasp. So we realise that people see with their ears. So if you can hear what is being said, you can be talked through the process, and that's what the rugby league video referee does really well. You can hear him talk about the ball's fallen short of the line, he's lost possession, therefore, you know, it's not a try. Everyone can see that unfolding. I think FIFA and IFAB will need to move to that point where they do broadcast video referee audio to the referee to help us explain to people so that they can hear the thought process of the referee and the VAR to get to a decision. I think that would be helpful. We made that recommendation at a workshop that one of our referee coaches attended 2 weeks ago in Zurich. So I think they will have to head down that space. How quickly they do it, I'm not quite sure, but I think that would be a good outcome.
Ben, this is an opinion rather than a question, but I just think it's slow, and we've talked already about how it slows the game down. I think it's, you know, its intention was good to try and get more decisions right. Whether you think that that's been achieved or not, I still think that's subjective. I think a lot of fans would disagree. And I think it's actually caused more controversy than we had before. And I go back to my, you know, earlier point, which I've been arguing about for months and years, and you and I have discussed this on the phone many times, that, you know, why not implement a respect campaign first before we change the culture, before we change the game? And we haven't even tried that. And instead, we're still getting, you know, with the VAR yesterday, Robbie Cornthwaite, and this is one thing that nobody's really discussed, after the decision, he's gone and given Chris Beath a verbal blast right in his face. So, you know, they're not respecting these decisions, even based on the best technology available, because they're still human decisions. They're still human interpretations of decisions. Do you agree or not?
What part of that, on that opinion do I agree? I think I agree that the players probably don't accept the VAR at this point, and Robbie Cornthwaite's reaction to being sent off yesterday is not acceptable. We've attempted to put some levels of respect and also image of the game considerations into the way we officiate around things like initiatives like through the crowd and dealing with the obvious and ongoing dissent. But the respect for the officials in our code is something that is not unique to Australia. I think that there's probably a worldwide issue around respect towards match officials in football. so we can do our part, but it's a big problem to address.
Ben, as big as VAR. Have you got buy-in from the players? Now, since we've had the VAR been brought in and people have had a look at it, and from all the people I speak to across certainly this weekend and probably last as well, they're not convinced by it either. Do you sense that there might be a sea change back towards a respect campaign towards referees because they've seen what the alternative is and they don't much like that either?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're necessarily linked between the respect and video referee. I think we're trying to... This is, remember, a worldwide trial in which we're a part of. And the question is whether VAR will improve the game. And that's probably still debatable. Fans and players would say that it doesn't. Other times, if you find a clear decision, a clearly wrong decision is corrected by the VAR, maybe it does improve the game. So I think it's too early in the process or in the project from IFAB and VAR to make that decision whether it improves the game or not.
So we leave behind the past and look to the future. So how long has this trial got to go and what has it got to do to either fail or succeed in the coming weeks, months, rest of the season?
Yeah, so we're committed to participating in IFAB's trial for the duration of that trial. They'll be making a decision, I believe, around March next year in the lead-up to the World Cup because they want to make a decision whether they will have VAR in the World Cup next year. Now, my thinking is that they can either say, yes, let's go, green light, or they can say we need to do further experiments and further trials and further tweaks of the protocol. Or they might just can it. They're probably three options. The advantage for Australia of being involved in this from the beginning is that we do have an ability to influence the direction of the protocol. And as I said, we had a person in Zurich the other week as part of the latest workshop to discuss that. So, yeah, I think by the time the World Cup rolls around next year, IFAB and FIFA will have made a decision as to the future of VAR.
Ben, are you a fan of this? Person, take your FFA hat off for a second and just tell us as an
good luck
individual.
Getting that hat off.
Just tell us as an individual, do you like this or not?
I think it can work. I think the protocol that they've come up with is sensible and is at the right balance and level. The implementation, I think we've seen, needs to still be tweaked a little bit. Remember that this is new technology. It's new to football. It's new to the VARs. It's new to the players. It's new to the fans. I think we need to give it more time before we can make a decision whether it's good for football or not. Ideally, I would like it to have been a little bit smoother than it was in the last couple of weeks, but the time is the biggest concern, and I think that the timing of decisions will come down as we get more familiar with the processes and the way it works.
Yeah, because on the weekend, back to your earlier quote about maximum benefit, minimum interference, we had maximum benefit, you could argue, on the weekend or near enough to it. You had maximum interference, unfortunately. Ben, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated. At least we've got a voice out there to explain things in terms of the people that are making the decisions. And good luck with the trial. And I think Simon's now penning a letter to the IFBH or whatever it is for, ahead of next March to vociferously get rid. But we'll see what happens.
Thanks, all Ben. Right.
Cheers, Ben.
Thanks, fellas.
So there you go. Simon, are you going to pen that letter?
No, I might pen a piece for Dave Wynn.
Which might be CC.
Hang on, I've got a couple other chores for you this week before you get to that one.
Wherever they are. Let's move on now. Let's go and talk about the Socceroos situation. So, Ange fronts front and centre last Tuesday morning, was it?
Or Wednesday.
Wednesday morning, yep.
Blows into one.
And said, yep, I'm out of here. And what are we, Monday now, 5 days later? I still don't know why. And he wrote a player's voice, great little website here. Fascinating articles. It's as the name suggests, it's player's voice. It's what they say, but in this case, coach's voice. And Ange says,
ex-coach's voice.
Yeah, exactly. Quotes: "Those who don't know me want a reason why I'm leaving. Well, I will say this: I don't know Ange Postecoglou. I've been sat next to him on a few Socceroos games and said hello every time I've said hello. I'm involved in football on a daily basis in terms of work with the media. I don't know him. I want a reason because I still haven't got one. It's fair enough that fans like us, and when it comes down to it, when you strip everything back, we're still fans. We want a stone-cold reason why he's done this. He went on to write in that particular article, hoping over time we'll get a clearer understanding of both the decision and what led to it. Well, no time like the present, I would have thought.
Why we want an answer.
I don't know.
If there is a reason.
Yeah.
The speculation.
He's danced around it. It was a masterful display. Floyd Mayweather couldn't have come up with a better display in the first six rounds of a bout than what Ange did in front of the press last Wednesday in dancing around the real subject of why he has walked away. And then we're all left now to fight amongst ourselves about why he's done it. Oh, it's Robbie Slater's fault. He told to get rid of him. Bozza, he was in and on it too. The FFA, they were hopeless. They shouldn't have let him walk away. This, that and the other. Oh, Ange, he's just walked away. He's got a pee heart. He's walked away. That's the other side of the fence. That's the other side of the argument. Somewhere in the middle of all this, there's the actual truth, and only one man knows it, and he actually hasn't come out and said it. That is so frustrating, from my point of view at least.
Go on, Dave.
No, it was so many conspiracy theories, and that's the problem. Is instead of talking about the Socceroos, instead of talking about the World Cup draw, we're still here none the wiser. And in that excellent piece, there's a line where he talked about how it was the first time he didn't go in and talk to the players. And he said he couldn't speak to the player because he said that I got them to buy into a idea. By the extension of that, they were buying into me. And I didn't want them to feel like I was letting them down by going away now. So by extension of that, I'd say there's a couple of million or hundreds of thousands or however many there are Socceroos fans who are probably feeling the same thing, which is that for 4 years they were sold a promise, a journey, a route to be at the peak in Russia. Mm. The journey wasn't smooth. We had the extra ride of qualification. We're at a point now where this squad is building towards its maximum. And if I took away my media hat on and put on my Socceroos fan hat on, and I looked at the fact that after the rebuilding of 2014, we're going to go to Russia in 2018 with a coach who's had the team for no more than a few months, you can look at the disappointment of Ange himself not being there, if you were a supporter of Ange or whatever, and then you have to look at it as a Socceroos fan and go, this team's not going to be as brilliantly prepared as possible because they've had a manager who's been in charge for 3 months. And that's not the 4 years of building towards a point. And the other thing he said was he feels like he's left them in a better state than when he took over from Osijek. And that may very well be true. But every coach is slightly different. Every coach prefers certain players. Every coach has a different style. The formation first and foremost. So just because of that flux that leaves the national team, my curiosity more than anything wants to know the answer.
Yeah, totally agree.
I must confess, I'm a little bit bored of this story because we're not going to find out the answer, clearly.
No.
Ange doesn't want to tell us.
Clearly.
And, you know, the fact remains is he's gone. Now, I'm disappointed in that. I wanted him to stay to Russia. And I know everybody thinks, oh, you in the media, you're all against Ange. Well, no, we weren't, actually. We were all very, very supportive of him. And in fact, it was probably Ange and the players who picked a fight with the media in the first instance ahead of the game against Saudi Arabia in June, if you remember. Yeah. Trent Sainsbury came out and said that they were sick of the media hammering them. And I remember reading that and going, huh? Nobody's written a dicky bird about at that time. Now, there's plenty been written and said since, but at that time, there was no evidence for that at all.
Yeah.
Ange then backed that up at a press conference by saying, oh, we're used to it. We've been having this crap written about us for 2 years. And I remember thinking, who's written anything about the Socceroos at that point? So I think that's something that's been forgotten. All the ducks and drakes that have followed in the lead up to the resignation and certainly afterwards, are we ever going to get any clarity? And if Ange doesn't want to provide it, well, that's all right. But I think we've got to move on. And we've got to try and look towards who the next coach is going to be. I think they need to make that decision pretty quickly. Whether they're going to be able to do that because of what's coming up with the Congress, et cetera, is another story. But, you know, this new coach needs to be in situ ASAP for the players as much for the public.
And on that, the Congress... At the moment, it all hinges on that. And when I say all, I'm not just talking Socceroos, boss, and we'd love to know why. And I think back to what I was saying before about Ange, like, I wanted him to stay. And the fact that we're all bumping around each other going, oh, should it be a foreign manager? Should it be Arnie? Should it be Muskie? Should it be Tony Popovich? That leaves you to believe that Ange Postecoglou was the guy to take us there.
Of course. He's the right man.
Yeah. And that was the height of the disappointment. There's 31 other coaches who are going to take this opportunity, and he could have been amongst them.
Yeah. Avoidable divorce, anyway, but we still don't know the reason. But the Congress, that is the big issue, and it's not just the Socceroos boss. It's the big issue full stop, because we've got an A-League that's just ticking over and just going nowhere.
You know, Adam, this reminds me so much of 2010. You remember when the World Cup bid was on? And the FFA were distracted. Mm. Their resources were being pulled in too many different directions. And the collateral damage, if you like, was the A-League. Because it was essentially ignored and left to its own devices. And we're in a similar situation. The club owners, obviously, they're fighting their particular battle. The FFA have got their particular stance. And everything is, hinging upon this AGM on the 30th of November. It has to be resolved one way or the other. If it's FIFA coming in, all right, that's unfortunate. It's embarrassing, particularly as FIFA is not an organisation that's particularly well respected worldwide. But if it has to happen, let's get it on and get it out the way, because this league desperately needs some focus on it. Yeah. At the moment, when your champion club that has just won three trophies can only draw 10,000 fans on a Saturday night, and more importantly, that's your biggest crowd of the weekend, we've got an issue.
Big style.
And we've got a big problem at the moment. The VAR is maybe a thing, and it's a little bit of a smokescreen at the moment, but I think there are bigger problems, and that is that people have switched off a little bit from the A-League. They're a bit disconnected from it. Now, the Ashes are on and the Rugby League World Cup, blah,
blah, blah.
There's always something. There's always something.
It's always something.
But I get that sense at the moment that there is a genuine disconnect, and there needs to be a refocusing PDQ to get this league back on track.
I'll go a little more blunt. I could not give a shit who is the next chairman, how the Congress is formed, who's on the board, as long as, firstly, it gets done quickly, and secondly, the people actually in those chairs give a shit about what they're doing in terms of the A-League and pumping it up, and the W-League as well. The Matildas. I mean, if the Matildas weren't around at the moment, and if we weren't qualifying for a World Cup, we'd be deeper down the well. Yeah. So it just frustrates the crap out of me that it doesn't seem to be the care factor about what needs to be cared about on a daily basis. And that is what we're interested in. That's what we broadcast. That's what we're fans of day to day. And it seems to have departed from that, because everyone's running around trying to grasp a little bit of power, either hold on to power or have it. It's both sides of the fence.
And you missed the crucial line out. You missed the crucial line out, which this network that we work for pays a lot of money for as well.
True. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, it just frustrates the living going around in circles, and no one's we're told that there's an new operating model for the A-League, which everyone knows
we've been
told
that for 12 months.
It's been sitting in someone's drawer. Well, why on earth do we have to pander around and wait for everyone to get back in the same room at the same time to discuss one little thing, and then all spread out again, and then all come back, and just
the power play and politics
done?
Here's a bit of speaking of 2010, which you were, Simon, just a light-hearted way to sum it up in terms of going around in circles. I was cleaning out my apartment over the weekend, as you do when you're a bit under the weather, and I found a magazine from 2010, a football magazine, with 10 predictions for 2011, right?
Is that what you do when you're unwell? I go to bed with a chicken soup. You clean out the attic,
do you? I was cleaning things out, and I found 10 predictions for 2010, of which about 7 of them still resonate, and the two that stand out were number 8. When will Frank Lowy quit?
2011 this was?
Right. Yes. So when will Stephen Lowy go? Number 9. Is A-League expansion a disaster or a good idea?
Well, back then it became a bit of a disaster. But it is interesting. It's pertinent. Back to Simon's point. That's directly after we've just gone all in, put all the chips in the let's try and get a World Cup, and we folded over a queen, and then we folded over a 3, and we decided that, hit me, folded over a queen, bust like you wouldn't believe, and away we walk from the table. What left? It did bounce back pretty well. Wanderers comes in. Expansion.
Yeah.
Yes. New bounds. Cingiano, Emil Heskey, Alessandro Del Piero. Investment from owners on big players coming in.
Go.
Hey, we're all interested. It was only 2 or 3 years after what Simon was saying. It can happen.
Absolutely.
We've got to get out of this cycle of boom and bust. Yeah. We're consistently on this path. Up we go, down we go. Up we go, down we go. We've got to have a more gradual but solid incline into growth.
It's consistency.
Because there's no... There doesn't seem to be any consistency of plan, of strategy over the medium to long term, let alone the short term. Anyway, did you have one more?
Is Ange Postecoglou the best coach in Australia?
There we go.
Hey, just quickly, back to that coaching thing. Sasha Ognjenovski on the early stage of the match on Saturday said something very interesting. He said, okay, Andrew's gone. Great. Who's going to replace him? And more importantly, how are we going to replace him? Who chooses? So my understanding at the moment, it's David Gallop, maybe a couple of board members thrown in, and Luke Casserley, as well. Sasha was saying, and he didn't put himself in this, he admitted there and then that he said, I'm not experienced enough. I didn't play enough football under world-renowned managers to be able to have an input in this, unlike a Mark Bresciano, a Mark Viduka, a Josip Skoko, those players of that ilk, to come in and either consult or be on a committee with a couple of others from the FFA to say, this is our guy.
Yeah, just choosing. So there's no... The only issue with Australian football is the relationships and the politics. And there's politics at boardroom level. There's also politics amongst sort of those kind of
exactly
social groups. Picking a truly independent, it's not the most ludicrous idea I've ever heard thrown out.
No.
I think it's a great idea.
And it's independent. It's independent of a group that at the moment are not showing a huge... get up and go in decision making.
Now, look back to 05, there wasn't a hell of a lot of ex-football intel that went into the decision to get Gosiding, so which makes me think that they'll go down that path again, because Frank Lowy was involved then, John Boltby was the high-performance manager. He didn't come from a football background, excellent sporting administration pedigree did John have, and he was a nuts and bolts man in that respect, no pun intended. But there wasn't... Graham Arnold wasn't consulted. It was a big secret to him until he actually sat down with Gus Hiddink, the first meeting that they had over in Eindhoven. So, yeah, I can't see it happening, but it's a good idea.
I think it's a great idea. And, that's golden generation, obviously very well respected. And I think perhaps crucially in some ways, because they had high-profile careers in Europe and quite lucrative careers in Europe, they're not necessarily dependent upon the game, or at least all of them, they're not necessarily dependent upon the Australian game for their future financial wealth or health.
No.
So the likes of Bresh will be, a relatively comfortable, financially well-off young man, I would imagine. Vinny Grell is the same. I know he's working as a...
He can't have him because he's an agent. Vested interest.
There are others like Mark Viduka, of course, is... Well, we don't know where Dukes is. But,
Dubrovnik.
He doesn't need to be involved in football on a day-to-day basis. So that gives you a semblance of independence while still having that commitment to the game in this country because he was born here.
Mm. And just a quick one, one of the things that people say the current board doesn't have is that feel of football now. So this is a little bit of an aside for another discussion, which is getting these players and these players with golden ideas from the golden generation and golden hearts having a greater say in the direction of the game, which currently isn't part of the current makeup of the board.
Let's move on now. No Barry from Bury this week. He's at pub, Simon?
Yeah, he's gone down the pub this weekend to celebrate because Barry got a point. And they're off the foot of
Didn't
League One.
Shrewsbury last week, or Shrewsbury? Shrewsbury?
Shrewsbury. They got a draw at the weekend. Don't ask me who played. But anyway, Barry's at the pub and he's very happy. They've got a new manager, Chris Lucchetti. It was a... Let's call him a no-nonsense central defender back in the day. But he started to do the job for him. They got a point.
Good on him. Sticking in England, may as well. Mila Jedinak picked up an injury on the weekend, shoulder injury, so hopefully it's not...
Steve Bruce said, if he's come off, it's not good.
I was thinking about it. It's not the worst thing in the world if Mila Jedinak doesn't play a lot of football over the Christmas period, just to freshen him up a little bit so he's in prime form next June and July. Aaron Moy played this morning and nearly nicked something out of the game against Yormont.
Nearly, but didn't. 18 consecutive victories.
Some record, isn't it?
They did park the bus this morning.
Did they not? They had 94 completed passes, Huddersfield, in 90 minutes of football.
City had, was it 330-odd in the second half alone?
Yeah, they had 680 or something like that. I don't know, it's a stat, but still, it's one
but
pass.
But you know what, even
one
so...
One completed pass a minute.
City, it was still, to all intents and purposes, a bit of a winning ugly exercise for City. They weren't as fluent, they weren't as free-flowing, certainly weren't as free-scoring. And they had to come from behind for the first time in 22 years in an away game in the Premier League.
Really?
How about that for a stat? 1995, the last time on the road they came from a goal down to win a game.
Given the red carpet's been laid out for City so much this year, that actually must be, as a City fan, an interesting test that you've been waiting to see if you could come across.
Yeah. It's good that it shows that they can, you know, dig in when things don't exactly go according to plan, and win a bit ugly. And they're going to probably have to do that at some stage. You know, they will lose a game. Everybody's talking about the Invincibles. It's very, very difficult to do that. City will lose at some point. I just hope it's not the derby in a couple of weeks' time.
They'll be 17 points clear at that time, probably. But when they do lose, yeah, they win. They just win. Matty Ryan, good to see him come up with and spoke to Bozza about this. I didn't see the game, but Bozza watched it. He said his distribution in the game is just immaculate. Once more, couldn't do anything about the goal that won United the game. The double save that he came up with.
Brilliant.
Off a cross that he may or may not have come for. But to perform on that stage, I mean, if you can do it there, it's the old Frank Sinatra song. You can do it anywhere. So
one of the nerdy things, one of the nerdy sort of park footballer things I was doing when we were in Honduras was actually just watching, because they stay out a bit longer, the goalkeepers, than everyone else, and just watching Matty practice his distribution and even the tactical variations on it.
Yeah.
The hard work is paying off, but watching what goes into it, it's not something that just happens.
I'll tell you the other thing that always amazes me, and it was the same when I watched Mark Schwarzer a few years ago, how Matty Ryan turned from this sort of skinny, rather nondescript kid that was had a shirt that was two sizes too big for him in the Mariners. It was almost like he'd been plucked out of the schoolyard and thrust into professional football. And
then all of a sudden,
he is ripped. He is absolutely ripped to within an inch of his life. And has obviously worked very hard to get that chiseled shape. And Schwartz, if you remember, went on that
paleo diet.
And all of a sudden, I remember seeing him after he'd been on that for a few months thinking, wow, look at how his body shape has changed. And it just goes to show, if you want to do it, you can do it.
Don't.
I won't be doing it.
You won't be doing it. That was my next question.
Oh, mate, I tried it. I was talking with Zappa yesterday about doing a detox. He's doing a detox this week. His wife's got him on it. You know the juice thingy for 3 days?
What?
I tried that. I didn't even get through 24 hours. God, it was vile. By 10 o'clock at night, I felt so ill, I thought I was going to vomit. Give me a piece of toast, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, little tip for young players out there. Don't take your shirt off next to Matt Ryan if he's got his shirt off.
Because you'll lose.
One man you could probably do that too is Clive Palmer. Let's go to the Clive.
The reason I'm standing for federal parliament is I'm standing to be the next Prime Minister of Australia.
This is the moment of optimism for the weekend. And it's just a short one because we're running out of time here. It was hard to be optimistic as a Schalke fan at half-time of their derby against Borussia Dortmund on the weekend when they were 4-0 down. Seems. And Dortmund's tweeting things like a player sipping a cup of tea saying, how wonderful is this? Well, Schalke come back, of course.
You should never go too early, should you?
No, not on social media.
Early
cry. You're stuffed.
Schalke come back and draw after a injury time equaliser from a set piece that was just... yeah. Poor defending.
Never gloat before you've won it.
I love the quote.
Note to the Australian cricket team.
Yeah.
That's only the first test, Adam.
Okay, yeah. But it's one more than you got. Peter Boss, the...
have you won it?
The manager. Yeah. As we sit here and record, Australia none for 140,
so
chasing 170.
So they've still not won it yet.
Yeah. So 10 for 30 is a collapse and a half. Peter Boss, the Dortmund's manager... this quote. You feel nothing but disappointment. When you lead 4-0 at the break... That cannot be allowed to happen. Cutting edge, Pete. I'm not sure Pete's going to get too many more opportunities to coach that particular football team because they got 1 point in their last handful of matches.
I don't know exactly, but they're swimming.
Yeah, I don't think they're swimming.
Headline writer's dream, that name, though, isn't it? Sinking. Peter Bosch.
Yeah, exactly.
Paddling, not swimming. Yeah. Wing.
No, sinking. Sinking. What a game. Incredible highlights there. From Germany. No political correspondent because we've done it earlier. We've talked about that. I had a little rant this week, didn't I, politically?
You did. Yeah, no, it's good.
Can I throw a Clive in?
Yeah.
A bit of a plug. And by the way, those Bundesliga clubs are the best at Twitter. They're dynamite. Did you guys see Jackson Irvine's tweet after qualifying last week where he had Jackson Irvine of 12 years old and Jackson Irvine of Socceroos vintage?
Yes.
Yeah. So we worked on a column to go out this week. I thought, you know what, there's going to be a bit of doom and gloom this week. So I had a chat to Jackson and he's written a column for us about that sort of how that felt because I thought we need to lift our spirits this week after all that's going on. And for me, the Clive is that, because it's not out yet. It might be by the time you listen to the podcast, but have a read of it, because it's, he said, I don't want it to be too cheesy, but you know what? This is what it is. Fan turned into player, living the dream. And that and tweet, went viral.
He was a fan of the Uruguay game in Sydney in 2005.
Yeah, 12-year-old.
And he's got a photo of him in the stands cheering the Socceroos going through. And then 12 years later, he's a player.
It's brilliant.
So that photo, the two blokes standing behind him, are two of my good mates. And one of them, the guy in the white, he's in an all-white like Adidas jacket. He's got a bum bag diagonally across him. He looks like he's about to go and rob a Coles. And he's got a white baseball hat on. He's now a respected real estate agent. That's a bit of an oxymoron. A respected real estate agent.
Might be a respected journalist, isn't it?
Northern beaches of Sydney. And he shivers every time he sees that photo. So now it's going out everywhere. I'm absolutely loving it.
7,000 likes or something. Oh, yeah. Out, so he's all... He's
Let's get it to 70,000.
And he will be in the Fox... Tell him he'll be in the Fox Sports Splash at some point this week, and I'll make sure the crop has him included.
Oh, yeah. The worst night he had to wear that get-up 12 years later, looking back on it, he just looks like an absolute
pleb. Love that. I love that tweet.
Great story.
Quick preview. The games this weekend. Friday night, beauty in Adelaide. Looking forward to this one. Adelaide and Sydney. And then Saturday is Western Sydney Wanderers, Brisbane Roar, two teams that desperately need something. Newcastle, Melbourne City after that one. That's a good one too. Sunday, Wellington Victory, desperation stakes. And Central Coast Mariners, Perth at the same time as that one. W League, Canberra and Brisbane. We've got Just for Kicks, of course, on Thursday to start it and to end it, Sunday shootout. Gents, we're done for time. We're looking forward to the football on the weekend, obviously. What stands
Absolutely.
Out for you?
So Adelaide, Sydney, I think. Yeah? That, a top four battle now. So, big test for Sydney, away from home, and Adelaide going well, so that, I think that's a standout for me.
Only very briefly, but given the breath of fresh air of Italiano playing for Perth, yeah, I do wonder whether Muschi and Johnny Aloisi need to have a think about just bringing some kids in, just to change the dynamic, even off the bench, to change the dynamic a little bit with the way things are going.
Well, gentlemen, I think John Aloisi might have to. He's got no central defenders.
I'm not here next week. I'll have a hangover, so I won't make the morning.
You enveloping again?
Nope. I'm going elsewhere in another part of the state of New South Wales with a few mates, and I won't be back until Monday afternoon.
Oh. Alcohol involved?
I don't want to promote such behaviour, but yes. Gentlemen, thank you. So looking forward to the podcast or listening to it next week. And enjoying the football on the weekend. Catch you soon.